Okay, this is Pearl 6 in a nutshell. Some people would say where it belongs. I've got a tremendous amount to tell you about, and we're not going to even scratch the surface of this redesign of Pearl. Thank you for coming along here. I know this is kind of a little bit fringe in a Linux conference, but I'm grateful for the opportunity to tell you about Pearl because I'm very excited about it. So the first question that we get is, why Pearl 6? How many people here use Pearl 5? How many people like it? Yeah, because all the other people are either listening to something else. Okay, why Pearl 6? Well, we'd agree with you. We think Pearl 5 is great. We love the language. We wouldn't be involved in it if we didn't. The problem is that parts of it are spelt slightly differently. They're just annoying things. And I bet if I asked you to put your hand up, you could all give me something about Pearl that you wish was slightly different. Yeah, or threading, or you name it. How many people have actually looked in the source code of Pearl 5? Yeah, you sort of get those hands going up. Oh man, I put that behind me and all that therapy and it's just been undone. Yeah, it's not good. It's really unpleasant, and in fact it keeps a lot of people away from contributing to the improvement of Pearl. And the problems with the source code are a reflection of the problems that are developing with the syntax. And that is, one of the primary goals that we've already had with Pearl is to be backwards compatible. So that every time we have to add a new idea in, we've got to do it in a way that's consistent with everything that's gone beforehand and doesn't break anything that already worked. So that leads us to keep bolting bits and pieces on to what was originally a very neat and very elegant design and implementation. And Pearl is on the way to not being that anymore. So we'd like to learn from those past mistakes that we've made. I mean, some things were just wrong. Pseudo hashes, what were we thinking about? You know, they're just evil and wrong and stupid. They don't do what they're advertised to do, and they do other bad things instead. Hindsight's always 20/20, so we'd like to apply a bit of that. We'd like to kind of go back in time and redesign Pearl as we should have done it in the first place. We'd like to be given a second chance. Because we think we can make it fit your brain even better. One of the things that I hear more often than anything else about Pearl is it just fits the way I think really well. And that, again, is one of these self-selecting type things, because if it doesn't fit the way you think, you won't be using it. You'll be using PHP or Python or something else, which are very good languages, but they're not Pearl, are they? But we think that there are a couple of rough edges that we could just sand off and then it would fit your brain just so beautifully. You wouldn't even know you were programming anymore. So the language needed a bit of a rethink. The implementation definitely needed a severe rewriting. I mean, some of the bits of the syntax just needed to be tweaked a little bit, and of course the semantics underlying them needed to be fixed. And that's been true for the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years with Pearl. And the question's always been, but how can we do that and maintain the backwards compatibility? And it wasn't until fairly recently, just a year or two ago, that we finally realised exactly how to make that problem go away. And it turned out to be incredibly easy. We can't. So we won't. So for one time only, we're going to break backwards compatibility. We're going to fix everything that needs to be fixed. And then we can sail on for the next 20 years without worrying about it anymore. So let me tell you about some of the issues. The first thing we've got to fix is the implementation. So we're creating a new runtime engine called Parrot. It's register-based, it's continuation passes, it's a virtual machine. It's not stack-based like the existing implementation. The reason we're doing that is because that way we can tie into all of the research that's gone over on in the four decades preceding this into register-based architectures. Virtually every CPU is based on register technology. There's a fair bit of knowledge out there about how to do that well. The most important thing is it's got to be faster than Perl 5s. At the moment, on comparable tasks, it's running 10 times as fast. And that's not bad, because as interpreters go, Perl 5 is pretty damn good. The 10 times speed up is pretty great. Of course, it's not finished yet, and it'll slow down as we add more features to it. Our aim at the moment is twice as fast. You know, and if that means we have to actually rewrite the Perl 5 implementation to slow that down, we're prepared to do that. So I can guarantee you it will be twice as fast as the latest version of Perl 5. Oh, and by the way, we also already have preliminary ports of Perl 5, Java, Python, Scheme, Ruby, Tickle, Forth, Basic, and a couple of other languages.
Fortran.
That run on top of this engine as well. And all the mechanisms are interconnecting them in there too. So if you are a Python programmer, but you happen to like the fact that we have the CPAN, you know, like 5,000-6,000 useful modules, you can keep writing in Python and just plug into the CPAN through the parrot layer. We want to make that as easy as possible for people to do. We're pretty excited about it. But what most people care about is the syntax. So now I'm going to talk a lot about the syntax. First thing I'm going to talk about is this little thing. In Perl 5, we dereference references with an arrow. In Perl 6, we do it with a dot. Ooh, I see all the grins. Ooh, no, it's terrible. There are three excellent reasons for that. One, we needed the arrow for something else, which I'll talk about a little bit later. Two, all the grown-up languages use dot. And if we're going to steal their programmers, we need to make it easy and friendly to come across to us. And thirdly, and I think the reason that goes down best with almost all the hacker audiences I ever talk to, two characters, one shift, one character, no shift. Oh, and by the way, that dot is, by and large, unnecessary. Most of the places where you formerly had to use it, you now don't have to use it. And you suddenly say to me, but hang on a minute, you just changed what that meant. We're now accessing the array called aref, not the scalar. And I say to you, no, no, because the other thing we're doing is we're fixing the sigils. Okay. Who remembers learning Perl and spending about 5 months trying to understand when to use a dollar sign and when to use an at sign and when to use a percentage sign? How many people still have to sometimes wonder? Yeah, the honest people. Okay, and so what you end up doing is evolutionary programming. You try one of them, if that doesn't work, you try the next one. The rules became unmanageably complex as soon as we put references into the language. So we've changed the rules. Now those three sigils always mean scalar, array, and hash. And it doesn't matter what you're doing with your variable, you always use the same sigil. So for example, in Perl 5, you had to say this to access an element of an array. In Perl 6, because it's an array, it's got an at sign in front of it. And any use of an array for slicing, whatever, has an at sign in front of it. And the same with hashes. They don't change their sigil. Hashes were horrendous. Hashes, you have to use all three sigils in Perl 5. In Perl 6, it's always that. And that means the dollar is now reserved exclusively for the use of real, genuine scalar variables. So when we write this, it's absolutely obvious that this has to be a scalar variable because it's got a dollar sign in front of it, so the dot is redundant. We think that this single change of the semantics will fix more broken code out there than anything else. Because people will assign a reference to a scalar 5 lines up, and then down the bottom they'll write this. Now in Perl 5, that's a subtle bug because they haven't turned on use strict. When they upgrade to Perl 6, that will just fix their bugs. Now that's language design, people. Okay, we have a problem though. Since we stole the dot operator to mean dereference, what do we use for concatenation? Well, we use the tilde. You know, and yeah, we know. We really did try everything, including some things that we shouldn't have even thought about, like various characters from the Unicode set. This was the best of a bad choice, and it'll grow on you. Some other things that you need to fix. In a scalar context, if you have an array or a hash, in a scalar context, that now automatically becomes an array reference or a hash reference. And the flip side of that is, anywhere where you're expecting an array, you can just use an array reference. And the same with hashes, as I said. So that means that if I create an array reference, and I can just do it like this, you can still use the backslash if you want to, I can now push straight onto that array reference, and it will push onto the array, without having to put the stupid at sign in front of it. More importantly, if I have a hash, and I've got an array stored in that hash, I can just push straight onto that array without having to put the stupid at sign and the stupid curly brackets around it. Less syntax. Same thing for hashes. If you've got something that returns a hash reference, you can just pull the value straight off it. If you've got a scalar hash reference, you can do the same thing at all. Someone said Unicode. In Perl 6, both the source code and the data that it manipulates are by default Unicode, although it will support certain legacy encodings like ASCII. So you can write stuff like this, and it will really work. Now, I don't suggest that you write stuff like this. Okay. But, you know, if you're German or French or Tibetan, it might be nice to actually be able to have variable names that you can understand. Apparently, most of the world's programming is now done in India. I'm sure they'll be very grateful for this opportunity. Apart from fixing simple niggles, we're also interested in adding to the language, extending its power. And one of the ways we're doing that is with a new data type called a junction. How many people have heard of quantum superpositions? This was an insane idea that someone came up with some time ago. A data structure which is a single scalar that acts like several scalars at the same time. It's kind of superimposed like quantum physics particles are. And you say, that's dumb. Why would we want something like that? Well, we don't want something like that. We want four things like that. I want a scalar value that acts like all of a series of values at once, another kind that acts like any of them at once, another kind that acts like exactly one of them at once, and one that acts like none of them. And that gives me four built-ins. All, any, one, or none. And if you give them a list, they give you back a scalar, which is equal to all of that list, or any of that list, or one of that list, or none of that list. Which means you can now write this. If any of the numbers is greater than 10, then it just does the right thing. That's a single scalar value that happens to be equal to any of those numbers. So if any of them is greater than 10, we do this. If exactly one of the roots is not equal to 0, if none of the guesses is greater than all the previous ones, we haven't guessed big enough. So what it means is you can just write these kind of group tests in a very natural and English-like syntax. The other thing it means is that the implementation is given a big hint that says this is something you could do in parallel. There might be 1,000 numbers here. There's no reason that it couldn't fork it out to 1,000 processes or processors or threads and do it all in massive parallel. There are also operator forms. How long have you been wanting to be able to say if X or Y or Z is greater than 10? I remember when I started programming, back in the Jurassic period, and I would write that all the time. I would say, if X or Y or Z, and the thing would go bananas. Okay, I just want it to work, so now it just works. But what about the bitwise operators? Well, they're still there, we just changed them and made them work properly. What else do I say? Oh, it's not just for values either. No. How about this? Take references to 3 separate subroutines. Make a single subroutine reference that's equal to all of them. And then at some point say, if effectively all of test 1, 2, and 3, when applied this data, return true, that's the way you want to be coding stuff. Not individual little tests all the time. Have it done in parallel. We don't actually think the threading model in Perl 6 is going to be much of a problem. We basically just got it there. Oh, and it works for types as well. So you know what those C programs are like? They're always bragging about their union types. We have a type, you can put different types of things in. Well, here's a Perl variable. Perl 6, when you put a type on a variable, it really does say this thing can only store things of type dog or derived from type dog. And here's one that will store things of type cow or only derived from type cow. And here's one that will store either. Because the type of it is dog or cow. Can't put anything else in there, just a dog or a cow. So, take that, C programmers. Besides which, our version is actually type safe. And it's only one of a larger field of interesting things. Unlike C programmers, we can also do intersection types. So, here's something Lonely Store wax. Here's something Lonely Store topping. Here's a variable that will only store something which is both a wax and a topping. And of course, Perl 6, like Perl 5, has multiple inheritance, so it's perfectly possible to have something that inherits from both classes. But that's all you can put in there. I think my favourite, though, are the anti-types. This variable will store anything except something of type soup. And no, I can't think of a use for that either. But it is so damn cool. And after all, that's what's really important in language design, isn't it? Okay. One of the things that annoys me most about Perl 5 is this. You know what happens when you write this in a Perl 5 program? A compiler gives you an exception and says, sorry, I can't do multi-way comparisons. Well, if you can recognize what it is, why can't you just do it? So it's currently an error. In Perl 6, it just works. Does exactly what you'd expect, only evaluates each argument once, short circuits when it knows the answer. It just makes sense. It's especially nice with junctions, because now you can say, make sure that all the coefficients are between 0 and 1. Not bad, huh? So once we got stuck into matching, we thought, another thing that really annoys us about matching is because Perl scalars will typically be holding a number or a string, and you can never be quite sure which, you've got to be careful about which particular equality test that you use. How many people have ever been bitten by using equals equals instead of EQ or vice versa? Yeah, me too. Well, we solved the problem. First of all, we're getting rid of that matching operator, mainly because it looks much too much like the newer string append operator, and we didn't want to spend all our time explaining what the difference was. So instead, we've got this new operator called tilde tilde, which is the generic smart match. I always like to think of it as that. Yeah, match it somehow. So if I smart match a variable against 0, it does numeric comparison because it's a number. If I smart match it against a string, it does stringific comparison because it's a string. If I match it against something where it's not known in advance what the type is, it works out what the type of that value is at runtime and does the appropriate matching. Match it against a list of things and it'll see if this is in the list using numeric comparison. If it's a list of strings, it'll do string comparison in the list. Two arrays, it'll match element by element. A hash against a scalar, it'll look up that string in the hash. Give it a subroutine. Basically, any two types of values you can give to this thing, it'll work out the smartest way to match them. It even works for types. So if you say this var matches the type topping, well, it'll do an is a test on it. Okay. Now that may seem a little bit cool, but you'll see shortly how incredibly cool it really is. Oh, and the other thing is that you can do it in either order. It doesn't care the order of the arguments. It just works out what both things are and finds the best way to match them. Another little niggle. Here, docs. Man, I hate this. You're cruising along, got your indentation level up a bit, and then you've got to put a here doc in with a whole lot of text. And so you've got to slam it back against that left-hand margin. Ugly. In Perl 6, you can do this. Because Perl 6 looks at where your terminator is and decides that's the margin. Just a little thing, but why not fix the little things as well as the big things? Subroutines. Lots of things wrong with Perl 5 subroutines. In Perl 6, for example, they can actually have parameter lists. Only like four decades after Fortran. And those parameters are effectively lexical variables that belong to the block of the subroutine. And they can be scalars and they can be arrays. And they can be hashes and whatever else you want to make them. Now, here, for example, I'm going to say, I want to do a check of some value to see that value's in that range, but here are some exceptions that it's not allowed to be. Now, the code to do that in Perl 5 is pretty horrendous. In Perl 6, it's just, if the value is between from and to, and the value doesn't, it matches none of the exceptions, then that's right. Notice the use of the smart match here. I've got no idea what kind of values I'm going to be testing. You work it out. Oh, and the other thing about array and hash parameters is that they're not automatically flattened. So if I want to check if two arrays are equal, then I could write the code to do that, and then I can just say equal that, and this becomes an alias for X, and this becomes an alias for Y. Thank you. Oh, and you can type the parameters. So you can say, I want a histogram. I'm going to give you an array of numbers, and I want you to return an array of integers. And I'll set up my histogram, which is an array of integers, and I'll do the calculation, and I'll return the histogram. And it will give me static type checking. And where it can't check statically, because some things might not be statically typed, then it will do the dynamic checking. Now, the interesting thing about this is that you could still write this subroutine without any types at all. It would work exactly the same way. But even if you did that, it would still be strongly typed. Every variable in Perl 6 is strongly typed. If you don't say it explicitly, you get the default strong types. which are these kind of spooky types. Okay, the default for this is an array of scalars returns either a scalar or a list. That's what subroutines do if you don't know what they do. And again, it would be an array of scalar by default. So PL6 is strongly typed. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Other cute things. You can have optional parameters. And in PL6, the way we do optional parameters is we put a question mark in front of the thing. And then we're allowed to put a computed value after it to tell it what to default to if you don't give the parameter. And that computed value can take the values of previous parameters and work with them. So this says, when I'm mutating my DNA helix, if you don't tell me how much to mutate, I'll mutate 1%. Isn't that cool? Yeah. All right. Oh, and you can do overloaded multiply dispatch subroutines. So you can set up several subroutines called message, and then when you call message, it'll work out at runtime, not like C++, which works it out at compile time and typically gets it wrong. At runtime, it'll work out what kind of value this is and therefore which of these particular message subroutines to call. And if it has multiple arguments, it'll juggle the arguments and find the best fit. Some sections of the Perl community do an awful lot of vector arithmetic. People who use PDL would be that kind of person. Okay? So one of the typical things you want to do is take two lists of values and do some operation element-wise across them. So Perl 6 has a special syntax for that. You put the naughty French brackets around an operator, and it becomes a vector form of the operator. So in other words, instead of writing something like this, if I've got a list of hours and a list of rates that I'm paying people, and I want to multiply them together element by element by element, in Perl 5 you've got to do this. This is actually written in Perl 6 syntax, but same story. Take each of the indices. In Perl 6 there is no dollar hash because it's an array, it's got to have an at sign. Instead there's an end method that says what's the last index of this. So take all the indices, and for each of those indices, multiply that element of hours by that element of rate in a map, and put the result in pay. Well, yeah, that works fine, but it's ugly and hard to maintain. In Perl 6, you write this. Vector multiply hours by rate. And if I had a static bonus, a scalar value that I wanted to add as a constant bonus, I could just vector multiply in that scalar, and it would multiply that dimensions of that scalar up so that each element got the scalar. So it knows about vector arithmetic and how to interact with scalars as well. Sorry? The naughty French brackets. How do I type? The question is, how do I type them in on an ASCII keyboard? The answer is, you don't. I've heard that Linux is actually capable of doing Unicode. The answer, the proper answer is, you can also just use two angle brackets. I do need to keep moving. I will take questions at the end. Okay. Perl didn't have a switch statement. Perl 6 does. And it's a ripper. Given is the switch statement. So given this value, when it's 1, do this. When it's A, do this. When it's in this list, do this. When it matches this pattern, do this. Yada, yada, yada. And all of these are being smart matched against this value. The first one that matches, that stops the whole process, and at the end of its block, it jumps out of the given. So it doesn't fall through. Unless you tell it to fall through, in which case it does fall through. The other thing about it is, these whens are just ordinary statements in Perl. So if you want to do something in the middle of the sequence of tests, you can. And that's something you often want to do, because you try a couple of things, they don't work, so you go and do something else, and then you keep trying. There's also a default clause that says, look, if you get to here, just do this, and jump out. That's not necessary, because you just put the code there, but the advantage is that if you put anything after a default, it complains to you, saying, what the hell were you thinking? For loops. We're fixing for loops. What's wrong with for loops, you say? I like for loops. I use them regularly. We want to simplify them a bit. So the syntax just looks like this now. For is effectively a function. It takes two arguments, the first of which is a list of values, and the second of which is a block or subroutine. So it looks like this. And you say, wow, gee, that looks familiar. And it is familiar. It's very much the same sort of thing, except you don't have to put the conditional parentheses around it anymore. You say, okay, yeah, but what about those iterator variables? I kind of like to see how to say for my $x in this list. And the answer is, your iterator variable is now just a parameter of your block or closure. What does that mean? That means, if you want to, you can put a subroutine here instead of a block, give it a parameter, and then the for takes values out of each of these elements of the array and passes that as the value to the subroutine doing this work. Now, of course, it doesn't actually call a subroutine. There's a bit of finagling there to speed it up, but the effect is that way. So now you can call the iterator variable whatever you like, and it doesn't have to have this weird behavior where it's declared out in one scope, but it only exists inside the other scope. Okay, so that's pretty cool, but it's also incredibly ugly. It's even uglier than the ugly Perl 5 way of doing it. So we said, well, if it's just a matter of ugliness, we can fix that. So we created another synonym for sub. There's another way to spell sub. The way you spell it is like this. That arrow operator that we stole way back at the beginning of this talk now turns up as a synonym for sub, but a synonym with the advantage that you don't have to put the parentheses around its parameter list. So if I join that all back up together again, it now just looks like, for each of this data going into next, do this. So it looks pretty cool. More important than looking cool, it works much cooler than this. Why is it cooler? Because it's a subroutine, and no one ever said a subroutine had to have exactly one parameter. So you can now do for blocks where the block has three parameters. And what does it do? Every time through the loop, it pulls the next three things off the list and puts them in. That's pretty cool. And as soon as we had that, we thought, well, that's pretty cool, but what if I wanted to, say, pull things off different lists at the same time? Eh, okay, that's not hard either. Perl 6 has a zip built in. And what does zip do? Zip takes two arrays and zips them together, interleaving them. So now if I zip together all the elements of name and age, I get name, age, name, age, name, age. I pull off two at a time, I pull off one name and one age at a time. And now I'm iterating through two loops, two arrays in parallel. And once again, it was just a little bit on the ugly side, so we created an operator that does it as well. This operator is also quite useful for setting up hashes. Take all your keys, zip all your values, that's key value, key value, key value, stick it into a hash. And of course, no one said that you had to use multiple parameters. So here I zip together the elements of two queues, but only pull off one at a time. Which means first time through the loop I do this, second time through the loop I do this, third time this, fourth time this, and so I now have multi-queue single server arrangement, change the number of things being zipped and the number of parameters, you can have MQN server arrangements for any M&N. Last thing I'll talk about is object-oriented Perl. In Perl 6, we have declarative classes, finally. When I create a class, you use the keyword class. You give the class a name. You give it some fields, data members, attributes, whatever you want to call them, with the has keyword. It's a bit like a my, but it means each object of this type has one of these things. The names of those things have to have a dot at the very first position of them. Why? So that down in the methods, I can just refer to them as $.name, and that means the attribute of the current object. So it works pretty much like C++ and Java and all the big grown-up languages do. You can make things read-only. You can make them private so they can't be seen at all. You have constructors. In Perl 5, you have to write a new constructor. In Perl 6, you create a create method. Why do you do that? Because in Perl 6, unlike Perl 5, all of the create methods all the way up your hierarchy get called in the correct order, automatically for you. Same with the destructors. One of the big problems of object orientation in Perl 5 is that you only ever get one destructor called, which is a very, very bad thing. If it was important enough to have a destructor, you probably should be calling it. What else to say? You get your new constructor generated automatically. So just by declaring that class, you get a new. You say name, value, name, value, name, value, and they get passed to all the creates all the way up the hierarchy. If you have a look at this create that I had again, you'll see that it takes a hash of values from which it just pulls out the ones that it's interested in by name. Oh, and while we were at it, we also fixed the indirect object syntax. Because people like to be able to say new dog tag, blah, 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 blah. But they couldn't safely before because there were four ways in which that was ambiguous. In Perl 6, by putting this colon there, we get rid of all the ambiguity. And we make it look nice. Here's a new dog tag, and this is what you need to know about it. Da, 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 da. Most importantly, those objects of those derived classes are opaque. You cannot get in and just muck around with the internals of an object anymore. You get useful error messages like kapow and kaboom. It literally will not let you do that. So finally, in Perl 6, we're going to get encapsulation. The whole point of this exercise is to make Perl 6's OO look sufficiently like Java that your manager will not be able to tell that you are not programming in Java. Okay then, let me draw it to a conclusion. First thing to say is we really only scratched the surface here. There are literally hundreds of other things, some even more exciting than I've been able to tell you about today. Typically, when I give this talk, it goes on about 5 hours, but I've got a watchman down here who's going to stop me in about 5 minutes, so that's not going to happen today. If people want to know more about anything, I'm going to be around for the rest of the day. Feel free to grab me, ask questions about it, whatever. I think you've got the idea, though. Okay? We love Perl 5. We love programming in it. We wanted to make it even better. So the conclusion is that we've been extreme programming the development of Perl 5 for about 15 years now. And it's finally time that we threw away the prototype and implement the real language. It's still going to be very much the Swiss Army chainsaw that you know and love. My experience in programming in Perl 6 is that it feels more like Perl than Perl 5 does. And I like that feeling. The only difference is that it's going to be faster, higher level in some ways, and a lot more powerful. So at that point, if I have any time left to me, will I take questions? Okay, now I've been asked to make sure that people go to the microphone, because this is being recorded for posterity.
Well, I won't ask about the roadmap, but can we expect to see it in a more usable position?
I would expect that we would be seeing a very early alpha release late this year. I would expect that 18 months would be about the time before you'd really want to be loading it up onto your system and using it in, you know, anger. That's the kind of time frame we're looking at. There's about one or two more major design documents that Larry needs to get out. We're working on that now. After that point, the implementation will begin in earnest, and then it just becomes a simple matter of programming. You're going to have to speak very loudly. What about the CPAN? One of the slides that I have to take out because I didn't have time was the slide that says all of the CPAN is already ported to Perl 6. Now, there are two ways in which that happens. One, remember I said that Perl 5 interpreter will be running on top of Parrot? Well, just go through that. The second way is that in the definition of Perl 6, there's something that says if the very first executable word in a file is the word package, that file is immediately interpreted as being Perl 5 with full Perl 5 semantics. In Perl 6, the corresponding word is module. So if it sees package, then it just flips automatically into Perl 5 through the compatibility interface and just runs it in Perl 5 semantics. Okay? And that's why I say all of the CPAN is effectively ported already. Almost every CPAN module, the first executable statement is package. So yeah, we were not going to just throw the CPAN away. The question is there any thought about a parser for good programs in Perl 5? Now, what a good program consists of, basically you mean your programs. For good programs in Perl 5 that would automatically translate them into Perl 6. We have committed to doing that. Just as Perl originally came with translators from Orc and Sed and the like, we are expecting to put out a Perl 5 to Perl 6 translator, and our goal is 95% correct translation 95% of the time. And we think we can do that. It gets a bit dicey when you have things like object-oriented classes, because it's hard to tell whether a subroutine is a method of the class or just a utility subroutine, so it's hard to know how to translate it. But I think that what there will be for that is there will be some hinting that you can do. Maybe you can go through and just put in a couple of little comments in your existing code, and that would help the translator work. But yes, we definitely intend that to happen. At the back there. XS. XS is dead. It was well named and will not be missed. In the new interpreter, the Parrot interpreter, has its own API, which is very much cleaner and easier to use than the XS interface. Again, we have to have some sort of compatibility mode, because a lot of the modules on the CPAN are frankly written in XS. So we have to have some kind of compatibility mode, but that would come under the auspices of the Perl 5 interpreter running on top of Parrot. So, for all intents and purposes, XS is dead. We hated it, and we're not sorry to see it go. We believe so. The reason that we believe this is that we currently have a bet with Guido van Rossum that by this year's open source conference in Portland, Parrot will run Python on top of it faster than the Python compiler. And it's a serious bet. There are cream pies involved in the bet. Dan Sigalski, who's developing the Parrot engine, is absolutely, well, he's the one that faces the cream pie if he doesn't succeed. And currently he has implementation that is running faster than Python. So we can make Python run faster over Parrot. We think we can do it with Perl 5 as well. And like I said, we always have the option of slowing the existing Perl 5 implementation down if necessary. Any final question? If he gets on the stage, I'm going to have to stop, so I've got 2 more minutes. Any more questions at all? I can't answer that question. The question is, why do we need a vector operator? Couldn't it just realize that both of them are arrays and do the right thing? Well, it could, but then how would you multiply the length of two arrays together to work out the total size of a table, for example? No, but that doesn't give you the length, that gives you the last index. Arrays in a scalar context still give, in a numeric scalar context, that is, still give you the length. Okay. The other reason that we wanted to do it was we wanted to give the compiler as many hints as possible that would allow it to parallelize as much as possible. For example, if you're running on a machine with an Ultivec engine, for example, it might be nice if we could just run it through the Ultivec engine. And so we want to give it some hints to make that easier to do. Well, last question. I'll take the front, but come on up and ask me the one at the back. Have we got anything left to put into Perl 7? Two answers to that. The first answer is we are hoping that Perl will eventually converge on 2pi. So we'll never get to Perl 7. The second answer is if we could think about things that we should put into Perl 7, we'd put them into Perl 6. Okay? But once we've finished this exercise of getting Perl 6 operational and had a nice long sit down, then we'll start thinking about Perl 7. And what did we miss this time around? We know that we'll have missed things this time around. But the idea is just to be infinitely better than Perl 5. Okay, we don't expect to be omega better. All right. In that case, thank you very much.